The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is produced independently and locally in Spokane, Washington by Spokecast Studios. Our city, our stories. Visit www.spokecast.com to learn more about how you can start your very own podcast today. Thank you to Jinx Universe and Position Music for letting The Perimeter use the song Let's Do It Again from Jinx's album Make It Look Good.
I want to share a local secret that everyone needs to know about. Owens Farms Piedmontese. For over 35 years, the Owens family has bred and sold a select amount of their premier Piedmontese beef by word of mouth. And now, for the first time, is being made available to the public through our partnership. Go to ofp.farm or click the link in the show description to reserve your half or whole order of premier Piedmontese beef today. There's only a limited amount of Owens Farms Piedmontese beef available, so make sure you don't miss out. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is proudly presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is brought to you in sponsorship with Delicious Hamburgers. Did you know Delicious Hamburgers and fries are the freshest in Spokane? Their hamburgers are never frozen, and that's because it tastes better. There's not even a freezer in the restaurant. Their fries are always made to order and never set under a heat lamp. It's differences like this you can truly taste. Next time you're craving the freshest hamburgers and fries, head to the corner of Augusta and Division and ask for the Perimeter Combo, a triple delicious hamburger with grilled onions, pickles, and special sauce. It also comes with fries and your choice of a milkshake. Delicious. Taste the difference.
Let me introduce you to the Spokane Workers Co-op, a locally based worker-owned holding company whose mission it is to increase access to living wages, workplace democracy, and autonomy, and to create the sort of lifelong career trajectories that are increasingly uncommon for the majority of people in America. The worker owners of SWC, regardless of which business they work, are equal co-owners of the entire holding company, providing them not just direct ownership of the fruits of their own labor, but ownership in a diversified and resilient portfolio of businesses dedicated to serving Spokane and the Inland Northwest. SWC also buys traditional businesses. SWC buys traditional businesses like LLCs, partnerships, and sole proprietorships, for example, from owners who are ready to retire and who want to make sure the employees who help them build their business are taken care of after the owner leaves. Learn more at www.spokane.coop. And if you're an owner interested in talking about selling, email SWC at team@spokane.coop. That is team@spokane.coop.
Let's do it again!
Welcome to episode 4 of the Perimeter Season 2, sponsored by Owens Farms Piedmontese. I got Brennan, the producer, with me, trying to help me through the recap of Baylor game and then the games coming up, Kent State and University of Washington coming up on Friday, Kent State tonight. Episode obviously airs tomorrow, so we'll go a little bit over Kent State, but a lot about UW and then obviously the Baylor game. Interesting, to say the least, how that game played out. Kind of a cool venue, Sioux Falls, kind of a weird venue, or location-wise. The venue's special. It's built after, got the style of the high school basketball court, so it kind of has this smaller feel, which I think is the right play for any college sports now, except obviously massive football programs, but I think smaller is better. It just provides atmosphere and that provides an entertainment factor for fans to keep coming back. But I think, a lot of people were kind of upset just that game was played in such a geographically different area for, mm-hmm. for fans on both sides. But I understand, there's a lot of ins and outs that go into scheduling games, promoters. It's not as just easy as like, oh, let's go play in Phoenix and mm-hmm. let's go play in Vegas. Like, obviously you got to make those decisions. And obviously Sioux Falls is not getting a bunch of games. Schedule is not as packed. So like, well, let's go meet there. But I know some Gonzaga fans are upset that they could get to the game, but it was a little more difficult, a little more expensive. And then, it's obviously not, Yeah. Very nice weather right now in South Dakota. It's like Spokane.
I imagine it's as cold, if not colder.
And so I think when people want to spend their hard-earned dollar, I get it. They want to go somewhere a little bit warmer. But interesting game. I'm just going to go over the stats real quick. So Gonzaga shoots 22-61 for 36%. Baylor on the other side shoots 23-62 for 37%. So obviously a complete wash on that. 3 points, same thing. 6-22 for Gonzaga at 27%. Not very good. 6-24 for Baylor, 25%, obviously not very good. Here, one of the biggest keys of the game, 13-21 for Gonzaga from the free throw line for 62% and 12-15 for Baylor. So obviously a wash on makes, basically. Obviously we get one more point, but we left 8 on the board in a one-point game. Here's a big stat that kind of, you know, if you're just looking at it, not watching the game, or if, you know, you just, you know, checked in and if you just went straight box score, sometimes you can do that and kind of get a feel on why teams won or why they didn't. Gonzaga plus 15 on the glass, which is a welcoming sign. You know, after the Purdue game, we got beat by 20, and that was kind of an issue with, you know, moving forward or kind of you know, some of the outer noise of you know, we always lose to Big Ten, you know, Big Ten, Big 12 physical teams. Well, we shored that up, plus 15 on the glass. So it was interesting to obviously lose that basketball game with that such an advantage on the glass. But here's the Achilles heel for me coming up in this stat is 18 turnovers. Baylor had 14, but we've had multiple plus 16 turnover games this year, and they've all been losses. I mean, we had 20 against Texas, we had 18 against Purdue, 18 against Baylor. It's just killing us at times. You know, we had 16 against Kentucky, but they were a different type of turnover. And what I mean by that is they're, you know, going downhill trying to make plays. Right now, some of the ones that we have are just uncharacteristic for Coach Few's team, and that's not saying he doesn't have control or whatever. You get what I mean? It's just usually we're a little bit more solid on post entries, on getting it into your offense. When you're getting, you know, light press, nobody really presses that hard because guys are too skilled, you know, throwing over guys' head, things of that nature. We usually don't see from a Gonzaga led team. So I think that was a big aspect of our of the game, not just because we lost, but for our inability to get in a rhythm. I mean, if you look at the shooting stats, I mean, 22-61 is not very good, obviously. We are usually in the 50s to 55s. I think we're shooting 51 on the season, always in the top 10 in the country in offensive efficiency. Now, the counter to that is on the other side, so, well, Baylor shot the same, so we did a good job on the defensive end. But that's more their style, is why I'm getting at that field goal, talking about the field goal percentage. You know, they're used to, not that they're not skilled and not that they can't play a fluid game, but they're used to playing rough and physical and bogged down. It's Big 12. That's kind of how they do it, compared to, you know, West Coast Conference or even Pac-12, you know, kind of West Coast style. They play more with, you know, 2-3 bigs, and you play, throw it inside, and you know, you wind the shot clock down, you run only on occasion, every time down you run a set, that type of an issue. So it's been an interesting non-conference start. We knew this was going to be difficult. We knew, obviously, Kentucky, we win that game, that was gonna be a difficult game. We knew Texas was going to be a difficult one, playing their first time on the road since 2019, true road game, you know, a non-conference true road game, with the team that we beat handily at home. So they're sitting there, you know, chomping at the bit. Then obviously we played fantastic against Kentucky, but then we knew going in West Virginia or Purdue was going to be a tough matchup in that PK legacy that we played in. And you know, I mentioned in the last show that I wasn't surprised at the outcome of the Purdue game, and that's not a knock on our guys or anything like that. It's just not how well they were playing and how good they looked the night before. And I was like, oh man, this is scary. And then we talked about a length that Edie's just a 7'4" kid's just a different entity that you don't see. You know, so it's been interesting to kind of see the ebbs and flows a little bit of this team early on. 5-3, obviously it's not the end of the world. You know, people really wanted this Baylor game to kind of offset the Purdue game and the Texas game. And then, at, you know, you have Michigan State's going to be a good win. Xavier's going to be a good win. But then you'd be like, okay, hopefully Kentucky can play well. And then you have Baylor. And then that would really, you know, strengthen your seeding potential for March. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just going into the last half of this bigger non-conference part, because, you know, about the end of January or the end of December, early January is when you start playing West Coast Conference. There's only really one big game resume wise that could help us as Alabama, obviously, coming up. So I know people circled this Baylor game on the on the calendar, and rightfully so, top six in the country. Obviously the history with the programs too, obviously the championship game a few years ago. So that was a meaningful backstory, I guess, to that ball game. But, you know, we had some guys play some good games. Anton Watson played fantastic, 5 of 8, 13 points, 3 rebounds. Malachi Smith off the bench, 5 of 11, 16 points, really paced us from the perimeter. But our backcourt had a tough one, if I'm being frank. I mean, Nolan Hickman at 0 for 8, did have 8 assists, just couldn't obviously make a basket. Julian Strother, 3 of 14, 10 points, 10 rebounds, and Rashir Bolton, 3 of 7, only 8 points. So, you know, if you've looked at some of our losses, and this is, again, the whole point of this show is to give people an insight of my thoughts. It's never a show to stir the pot within the program. It is to get your mind thinking of different perspectives on the program or where the season is at now. But those backcourt guys got to play better. If you look at the Purdue game, I think it was 1 for 6 for Julian, 1 for 5 for Hunter Silas, and it was 4 for 12 for Rashir Bolton. So, you know, if you're being fair, you can say, all right, in the losses that we've, you know, taken this year in the bigger games, our backcourt hasn't shot the ball well and hasn't played a complete floor game. Nolan Hickman played great against Purdue. Okay, so then you're like, well, that could be a devil's advocate to that point. But it's also, you know, one of those issues where it has to be solved. And it's not like these guys can't play or they don't have the ability. They just have to play solid. And I know that sounds so cliche and so simple, but you can't go 3 of 14. Julian Strother, obviously a fantastic player, has ability to score in bunches. And then obviously Nolan can't go 0 for 8. You got to give somebody else an opportunity, or you got to give your teammates an opportunity to be successful off your success, off you playing well, creates other avenues, especially at the point guard position. Drew Timmy goes 3 for 6, 9 points, 5 rebounds. You know, he's averaging 21 a game, preseason All-American. He's allowed to have an off game, and they designed their whole defense to stop him. So my point is, you knew that type of game was going to happen. Not that Drew can't score in bunches, but there's going to be a night when you get the whole defense kind of tries to shut you down and you play, all right, it's somebody else's time, and he didn't really have that from a team perspective. So, you know, from a backcourt, you know, idea or a backcourt of, you know, really talented players, Nolan Hickman, obviously a great player, Kentucky recruit, highly touted, fantastic, he's got an opportunity to be very good here. We've had great point guards, same similar build as Andrew, same similar build as Josh Perkins. You know what I'm saying? So he's got the quickness, he's got the size, everything that's been successful here. He's got to play better in these type of games. Mm. Played great in Purdue, played better in Xavier. So I'm not saying it's been bad the whole time, but he can't go 0 for 8 and have 8, you know, 0 points. It's just tough. Same with Julian Strother. I mean, he's rebounded the basketball well, 10 points, 10 rebounds, but the 3 of 14 really makes it difficult. Now, this is a really great Baylor defensive team. We've seen this before, but it's also, you know, like I said, you have to be able to make shots or have an imprint on the game from a scoring perspective, even if you don't shoot the ball particularly well. And what I mean by that is try to get to the free throw line. If you're really struggling from the outside, sounds funny, go push a guy in the back and go to get an offensive rebound. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Go leak out, cherry pick, get yourself going, try to get to 14, 16 points, and you still have an impact on the basketball game. So, you know, I thought Ben Gregg did a good job off the bench as a big, but we just really didn't have any rhythm offensively through the start of that game. We made a nice, when we got down 12, made a nice run to get back into it. But it's just the wing and the perimeter play has been, was not very good that game. I mean, Malachi played better off the bench. Obviously 16 is great. He has the opportunity, in my opinion, to be a really good scoring punch, something that we really need. But yeah, it's just frustrating a little bit watching, you know, some of these guys just have to be able to find it within themselves to knock down shots and make better decisions. Like I said, the downhill turnovers, what I mean by that is, you know, let's say you break a guy down, defense slides over, you try to make a pass and gets tipped out of bounds, or it gets tipped to where it, you know, leads to a turnover, but you're going downhill and you're trying to score the basketball. I know that sounds so simplistic, but the ones where you're reversing it, calling the key pass in the offense, or you're catching it at 25 feet, and then you're trying to make a post entry that's out at 18 feet, and those are the bad ones. And we've had too many of those. Or like I said, you're getting soft 1-2-2 press, and you throw the, you know, usually throw it back and forth a couple times, let the defense get to the split line, then you bring it over, throwing that ball over his head. We've had a lot of those this year, dribbling off her foot, stuff like that, or dribbling to the dead zone. They call that, the other term is like short corner, but dribbling to the dead zone where then you have no angle for a pass, or the pass back out is really long. You know, but I was impressed. Let me go over some of the good. Like, I know I just,
I was going to ask what good you saw in the game.
Well, I mean, the rebounding, like I mentioned, was good. And then, you know, they fought in that second half to take the lead, be up 7 with 2 minutes to go. Mm. Right. So, I mean, they played bad and were, you know, a chance to win against a, you know, top 10 program. So like for me to counter and play devil's advocate a little bit is, if you're a fan and you're upset, it's like, well, that is a step in the right direction, not playing good and being within the game and could have won that game. Mm-hmm. Right. So, that's what I look at when I, you know, call these games, is like, all right, what's the next step, or what's the growth pattern for a team like this, where you've been kind of kicked and you're a little bit upset and, you know, some of these games have gone out of reach, and then you finally fight and you get into a game where you haven't played well, but you rely on your defense, you rely on the glass, to get in that game. That's a welcoming sign, mm-hmm. because that means that guys are, you know, not that they weren't tough, but they were, the tougher mentality as a team is forming, the chemistry in that regards is forming, which is always a good sign, because that carries you through, you know, the dog days of February. And then when you get into March, there's going to be a time when you don't shoot it well, but you got to rely on your defense and glass and get into the free throw line. All those things matter. So I was impressed with that. You know, I was impressed with having a bad start and then having a good fight to get back in it. So I think just overall, like, there is some positives you can take away. I think just if the perimeter play has to improve from a scoring standpoint and a turnover standpoint, I think defensively they've done a pretty good job. But guys just got to string together makes. And I know it sounds so simplistic, and it also sounds like, well, you know, you didn't play defense, so you just scored. So you know what I'm saying? That's why you're saying it. It's like, no, actually, but you have to. You know, obviously Julian's a fantastic player. He can't go 3-14, and Nolan can't go 0-8. And they know that, and that's not a knock. It's just one of those deals where you kind of have to will yourself to get to either to the free throw line or make an impact on the game from a scoring standpoint. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this team going in tonight. Now, Mondays when we film and obviously put it out Tuesdays, Kent State's a very good basketball team, only lost to Houston by 4-6-2. Overall, you know, in the Mid-American Conference, it's kind of a must-win for us. Obviously, being at home, tougher loss, UW coming up on Friday. I'm interested tonight to see what our mindset looks like. You know, weird travel coming back.
Yeah.
All that stuff matters. I'm interested to see how the fans' reaction is when they get in the buildings. We haven't played there in about a month.
Yeah, it's been 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know, the fans, the students going to be excited. Obviously, the students will be, but the rest of the fans going to be excited and kind of root these kids on to get, you know, back on track and start making the plays that they know how to make. But yeah, this is a very good Kent State team. Usually, I hate to say this, but the last 5 years, some of these games coming back from a trip like this used to be kind of a complete layup. This one's not. Yeah. I know that sounds funny, but like this team hung with Houston, who's probably the best team in the country right now, or top three at least, only lost by four. And they're the type of team that's what we were 10 years ago as far as, hey, we're good. We got experience. We're hungry from a smaller conference, and we'll go play these type of games, totally locked in, ready to go. So these games are really scary for us.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they come out. But I mean, I do think that what separates good teams and great teams is that they'll come out. I would see them coming out and just hopefully wiping the floor. But
yeah,
but you know, but like you said, Kent State's been playing really good, so
yeah. No, it definitely is interesting, but it sounds funny, but it's like a must win in the sense of just getting back on track. Obviously, if something crazy happens and we don't win this ball game, we've still plenty of time for the NCAA tournament, all that. But I'm talking about like team mindset, feeling good about yourself, getting a good quality win, because you know people know their opponents more so than the outsides. Like, you know, when you watch the film, like, well, these guys are good. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be interesting, like I said, to see the reaction that the fans give this club, because they need a pick-me-up. I mean, that's a tough loss against Baylor. Hard fought, like I mentioned. Really wanted that win for, you know, the kids in the program, and then for seeding down the road. I'm excited to see where this team could – what they could do from a loss like that, how they could use the positives and grow and build for them. I know that sounds kind of childish or rinky dink, but I think this is a young team in certain spots, so they need things like that.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch that growth. And a lot of times you can put those type of losses or those situations in your back pocket and use them down the road. So hopefully they do that. But it'd be interesting, like I said, to see the growth and where that goes.
One of the biggest questions that came out of the Baylor game that I put a poll up, or and you know, the biggest thing was guard play and like Malachi Smith versus like, should he be starting or should, like, I don't really want to encourage those people to be like, we need to start Malachi Smith over. Hickman, but
no, that doesn't sit. No,
in like this, but this,
do you want me to go over like why?
Yeah, please do.
Okay,
I think that's
so. Malachi is a fantastic scorer, and when I go through this process, it's not. I'm not saying this guy is necessarily better than this guy, and you're crazy for thinking that. I'm going to go over it from a coach's standpoint, from a next player standpoint of why one guy should start over the other, and then also why sometimes it frankly doesn't fucking matter who starts. If you play starter, they used to always say you play starter minutes, so you should kind of shut up. And I guarantee Malachi and Nolan feel the same way, understand that, is like, it matters who's on the floor end of the game, and if you're playing starter minutes and getting the ball game opportunities, like you don't even care. You shouldn't, and like you're not. You wouldn't be playing high-level Division I basketball if you did, is my point. That's like a eighth grade fucking high school bullshit. We're like, I'm not starting. It's like, well, if you're okay. So anyway, sorry to go off that, but no. I've heard it many a times, and I came off the bench numerous times in my career at every level. And my dad used to always say the same thing. He's like, were you on the floor at the end of the game? He's like, yeah. He's like, okay. So why does it matter? Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then that's really the answer. Are you in the mix? Yep. Are you getting your opportunities to score and buys passing ball? Yep. Okay. Who cares? You know what I mean? So anyway, like Malachi is more of a scoring wing. So I guess you'd call him a combo. He's not a true point guard, in my opinion. He'd probably say the same thing. In this offense, you need to have, you know, speed burst and, you know, you know, flatten the defense is basically what I'm trying to say. You need to get in the creases. There's a lot of DHOs, dribble handoffs. There's a lot of side ball screens. So you, a lot of times our point guard is there to initiate. Obviously, we want him scoring, but as an initiate to post-entry, weak side duck-ins, and then obviously the thrust up the floor. That's why we have such deep outlets all the time, and we push and push. And a lot of times it doesn't show up in scoring, but if you continually flat the defense, you get the trail threes and all that stuff that gets our guys in rhythm. Nolan's better at that than Malachi. He's faster. He's more of a true point guard that comes off ball screens and can make those type of reads. Nolan has the ability to score, but not like Malachi. So there's the counter to that. I think Malachi is a guy that is a score first wing player, and that's not what we need at the point guard position. Now, do you need his scoring off the bench? Absolutely. Is he going to play a ton? Absolutely. He should play 25 minutes a night if he's putting the ball in the basket every time. And I'll be the first one to say it. But should he be our starting point guard? Probably not. Nolan's fine. Like, he just had a bad game. He had a great stretch, like I mentioned. Purdue, we played well. He played good against Portland State. Let's not diminish that. You know what I mean? There was still Division I basketball players. You got to go out and do it. And then he played great against Purdue, had 15 points, kind of let us going early and kind of kept us in the game, even though we were getting our asses handed to us, right? He was the only stabilizing force on the perimeter. I mean, they played great against Xavier, made winning plays. So I think that the way the lineup is set, and I would say this, I wouldn't give a shit if Coach Few got pissed at me, and he probably doesn't even listen to this fucking thing anyway. I'm just being honest. You know what I'm saying? Is the lineup is fine. There's no change that needs to be done. I mean, Rashear's played well at times. He hasn't played well at times, but him and Nolan give you speed and thrust on the perimeter, and you need a scoring punch off the bench in Malachi. The real question is how many, you know, what's the minutes look like then for Hunter Silas? And that's the real question that could be, you know, could play out down the road. I think he's made improvements this year. You know, he's played a lot sometimes and hasn't. And I think they kind of just do that based on the feel of the game. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not at practices. I don't know what he's looked at practices. Like I said, sometimes he plays a lot, sometimes he doesn't. So I'm not even going to comment on whether he should or shouldn't be playing a ton, because I don't know. You know what I mean?
I think the it's a reaction to almost just watching, I mean, obviously watching the game, seeing, you know, Nolan go get 0 points in 35 minutes, and then at the end take a couple shots that I think people thought maybe were bad. I also think the commentators were really talking a lot about Malachi Smith and his time at Chattanooga. And I think when fans hear that, they're like, he was a starter there. Like, he should be starting here. And
They're not. If they were both wing players and you're kind of your combo twos and threes that score, then you could make that art. But they're different players and they're asked to do different things. So, like, Nolan's as a point guard, Malachi is a combo. Okay. So that's for me is why the lineup is fine. And then, like I said, Malachi Smith is going to play a ton if he puts the ball in the basket continually, like he did the other night. If you shoot the ball at a high, you know, a good clip, Coach Few keeps you on the floor. I played again. I've done it ad nauseum, but it's part of the why people like the show. I'll use myself example in the program as I played off the bench my freshman year. Probably could have played more, but I was playing 18 minutes a night, average 11 points. But there were some nights I'd play 25, 27 points. You know what I was doing when I first got in the game? Putting the ball in the basket, stayed on the floor. When I didn't, it wasn't like make or miss. Every shot was like, you're coming out. But I knew my minutes were going to be probably I'd get a 6 minute run, 6 minute run, 6 minute run, or whatever. You know, if I keep making it, I'll probably get a 10 minute run. You know what I'm saying? Or I'd get put back in for somebody that just picked up their second instead of the other guy. You know what I'm saying? So that's basically how Malachi kind of is viewed, as strong, good athletic point guard, not as fast, decent ball handler, could get better at it, but a score. He's a scoring guy, combo. So go in the game, be a second unit scorer, which he's done at times. And once you get hot and get rolling, you're going to stay on the floor. It's as simple as that. So I appreciate the thought on that. You know what I mean? But I think there is no reason for a lineup change to be done. Nolan had a bad game. You know what I'm saying? That's just my opinion on it. All right, getting to the last kind of segment here, I guess, or last topic is University of Washington coming in Friday. 7-2 overall. Mm-hmm. Obviously started Pac-12 play, which is kind of weird to me that they do it, but they obviously have played like 18 games or whatever they do. They play a longer season, so they kind of mix it around. Mm-hmm. Much better than last year. We were looking before the show started because I was trying to think, like, when I played, obviously they were really good. Mm-hmm. Brandon Roy, Bobby Jones, Will Conroy, Trey Simmons, like all those guys either played in the NBA, had a cup of coffee in the NBA, or played overseas at like EuroLeague, like good players, mm-hmm. like really good players. Brandon Roy would probably be in the Hall of Fame if he didn't get hurt. That's always been my opinion. Like mm-hmm. if he stayed in Portland, his bodies didn't betray him, he'd probably be multiple all-star. You know what I'm saying? Like Damian Lillard is in Portland.
Right.
Before him, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, so anyway, like that, and then the crew that came after it was John Brockman. I think Spencer Hawes went there for a year. So like they had good players after that. Isaiah Thomas,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like really good professional NBA players. And then obviously good college players, you know, obviously. So we were looking like, okay, so when's the last time UW has been like kind of relevant? They've made one NCAA tournament appearance in 2019, but in the last 11 years.
Yeah.
And so where I'm going with this is like, this is not a bash UW thing. I have no qualms against anybody that's gone there. I think the university's nice, whatever. I don't really have, it's not like a football rivalry to me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. it's just, why haven't they been better? Is I've always been puzzled by it. And I've always wanted to like kind of talk about it on on a deal, because it's like that area of the country, it's kind of a weird pocket of basketball talent. And when I mean weird, it's just like, because it's so far, you know, up in the Northwest in the corner of the United States. That's what I mean by weird, not anything political or culture or anything right. like that. It's mm-hmm. just like Seattle, you know what I mean? But like, if you look, how many NBA players have come from that region and good college players, it's unbelievable. I mean, the kid last year that went number one, Ben Caro, was from mm-hmm. Seattle.
Yeah.
The number one pick, and he's like killing it at Orlando. Mm-hmm. Just out of Seattle. You know what I'm yeah. saying? Like, it's wild to think Spencer Oz was a one and done. Martell Webster didn't even play college there, went one and or straight to the NBA. Mm. Like, it's crazy how much talent is in that area. And frankly, how not very good Washington has been. And this is coming from somebody that wants the rivalry to be back to where it kind of was when I was playing, and has a lot of respect for the guys I just mentioned as players. It's not a, you know, there used to always be this weird, you know, you're from Spokane and Seattle, you're supposed to hate you. I'm like, I don't like the, you know what I'm saying? Like, right. I don't really care where you live. You know what I'm saying? Like, we'll play, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just a weird, okay, whatever. My parents chose to live here. Your parents chose to live there. Like, we had no choice. You know, like, what are you talking about? But it's always been fascinating to me in the last 10, 11 years. It's like, why is this program able to get some of the, Terrence Ross, another one. I'm just, yeah. Every time I keep talking, I think of more NBA guys that are from Seattle. Obviously, Jamal Crawford, but that was before my time. But, like, Jamal's like the OG over there of Seattle basketball, like literally. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I always, it's fascinating to me why this program can't get it right. I think they have the best arena besides Arizona's in the Pac-12. I mean, everybody's well, what about UCLA's with the history? He's like, yeah, but nobody goes to the games. It's LA. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking about like atmosphere. The heck yet is unbelievable. It's probably like 8,000, maybe 9,000. But it's small, it's compact, it's, you know, it has a rise to it, so there's really no bad seats. It kind of feels like the kennel where it's,
yeah,
it's jumping every time, or mm-hmm. even if it's not all the way full, it feels better than a you know, massive arena. And then also too, this is what's the puzzling part. One of the puzzling pieces for me is Seattle has a great basketball culture. They've had one for years. Obviously, everybody wants to Howard Schultz, they want to fucking stab him if yeah. they could, because they took the Sonics, right?
Mm-hmm.
they're starving for just basketball there, high level basketball. So there's like fan support for UW, even if you never went there in that area, that would support that program. It's just really fascinating that they haven't been better. And the reason why I'm talking about this, because we're going to walk into this rivalry. I think this is the last year of the deal, and I just hope it stays around. And I hope UW gets better. I've said this on the radio when I do it with Huddy. Is like, I always root for UW, and people are like, what? It's like, I want this rivalry to be good again. It's fun when they're better. It's fun when, you know, the two teams from the Northwest are kind of messing up the whole West Coast, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then it brings, you know, it brings some of that Seattle Spokane stuff. That's fun for people to talk about.
Yeah.
I don't care about it, but it's fun for people to talk about. It makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm just really, honestly fascinated. I don't know if it's the coaching. Obviously, that has something to do with it. I've always wondered this, and people might think I'm nuts, and I don't think I am, but Brandon Roy's been a fantastic high school coach over there. Why not give him the job and let him try it? He knows the area. He knows, you know, how to communicate with kids, won a state championship at whatever, Michael Porter. There's another one.
Yeah.
Michael Porter.
Yeah.
I think didn't go to UW.
Yeah.
Went to Missouri. Okay. I mean, there's fucking a list of guys that are from there that UW couldn't land.
Michael Porter going to go to UW and then he backed out because of Lorenzo?
Something like that.
Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. And sidebar, like, I love Lorenzo Romar. I see him every year, obviously, at Pepperdine. You know, just by walking down the hall, we'll just stop and talk for a couple minutes. He's fucking awesome. He's always like, man, just tells funny stories. Like, when you're coaching, you fucking, he's just cool. He's just a cool coach. You could see why the players love him. Like, I love Lorenzo. He's a nice dude. I've seen him on airplanes before. We always find a way to see each other once a year randomly. You know what I'm saying? Just random spots. Like, oh, what's up, coach? You know? But I would get Brandon Roy. I'd give him a shot at that, you know, job if he would take, you know, I don't know if he'd, I have no idea if he's interested in coach, but like, if I'm UW staff or the administration, I'd be like, he knows the area, the players, you know, the younger kids know who he is and respect him. He'll get all of the love from the former NBA guys to help build that program. And that matters. That stuff matters for recruiting and donations and, you know, drumming up support. And then just let him have a shot at it. What do you got to lose? So, you know, this game Friday will be interesting because this is a better basketball team. They're 7-2 right now. Last year, they weren't very good. We blew them out. When we went and played, yeah, we played over there last year, the year before, blew them out in their arena, you know, so.
The fun stat, the last time Gonzaga lost to.
Is when I played there.
Is when you played there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fascinating.
If you
really think about it, because, I mean, if we really wanted to sit here, we could go through, you know, last 10 years, 11, 12 years, how many big time recruits or just even D1 players. And then that filters into NBA players came out of Seattle. You'd be fucking, your mind will be blown. It's crazy. And you're like, yeah, that guy didn't go to UW. That guy didn't go to UW. Mancaro didn't go to UW. He knew he was going to be one and done. His mom played there.
Right.
Couldn't get him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it is interesting.
And I know Duke is a high level. I get all that, but it's like, I want this program. This is not just a bash, but I'm like, I want this program to be good again. It's fun when they're good again. East, West, and all that stuff gets talked about. And, you know, it's fun when these programs get to kind of go head to head. So it'd be an interesting game. Obviously, hopefully we beat Kent State going to that game 6-3. They'll be 7-2. Like I said, much improved, even though I just killed them for 5 minutes or whatever it is. But they're improved this year. But I think that coaching staff is kind of on their last deals. They haven't been good for, you know, last time they made NCAA tournament was 2019, but that was kind of an offshoot deal. Like I said, that before that and after, they haven't had any postseason success. So it'll be interesting. how it plays out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, last couple of years, Washington was always supposed to be good, and then they just...
Yeah, they've had some issues.
They've had some issues, and... Yeah.
They always have the talent.
Yeah, but that is weird about the recruiting is like how, like, they just can't... They don't get... They're really good players to go there.
No, and, it's wild. I mean, like I said, like, the... I mean, you probably can get in the 15 to 20s on NBA players in the last 15 years. You know what I'm saying? It was just crazy. Yeah. Like, even like a John Brockman that went there, like, played in the league for like 6 years. You know what I'm saying? But they can't get any of those type of guys anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I don't understand it. And like I said earlier, Seattle is starving for like basketball. They love hoop over there. The culture is great. Like, you know, down by, now it's Climate Pledge Arena. The old key, like the Bar Airs and Queen Anne and everything down there, wherever that area is called.
Yeah.
It used to be awesome for Sonics games. It was such a cool vibe, different vibe. You'd walk to the arena. It's old Seattle. You know what I'm saying? It's just kind of weird, but it was, they knew hoops and they loved hoops. And so I'm always sitting there like, man, this city would just love to have a high level basketball to go watch. Cause they love hoop. It's just like Portland, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's this pocket of, we love hoop. So, you know, again, a lot of respect for UW as far as just as a school. And it's not, I don't really get into the, you went there, screw you. I think that's kind of juvenile thinking in my opinion, but also it's like, man, I want this program to get back to where it was. Cause it's a lot more fun. But again, like, you know, the way we've played up and down and kind of fluctuated this year, it's going to be a much better game. And hopefully our fans are excited and should understand that how this is still a rivalry. And we've just kind of taken control of it. But yeah, like the last time you mentioned, last time we lost to them at their place was my junior year and last year. And we played them. My first year we lost. No, we won. We obviously beat them. At their place, and I played like 4 minutes and got a technical early for grabbing a guy's jersey at 2 points, and Few sat me the rest of the fucking game. I was still mad about that game. It was Dave Libby, too, made the call. And I don't know, I'm just rambling. People listening, like, who the fuck is that? Who cares? Old official, great official. Took no shit from anybody. He ended up being the head of the Officials Association on the West, like one of the West Coast ones.
Okay.
And I saw him on an airplane, like, 3 years after I was, you know, after I was out at Gonzaga, and I just started laughing. He didn't give a shit. He's like, yeah, you grabbed his jersey. I'm like, still, just call a fucking foul. Don't call technical. And he's like, don't grab his jersey. You know, he, like, knew that he was being a dick. It was funny. He like knew he was being an asshole. But yeah, I remember that game. I grabbed a guy's jersey because again, it was on an out of bounds play. I was getting hung up on a screen. So I just grabbed it, but I didn't like yank it, but I just grabbed it real quick. And he goes, beep, intentional foul. Coach Few lost his mind. Fucking sit down. Never went back in. Fucking sucked. And I was like, a lot of friends were over there, you know, going to school, not at UW, but just in that area. So family drove over there. It was a tough one to swallow.
Yeah.
Then we had a classic. Yeah, we had one of our all-time classic Kennel games in there, too. My sophomore year.
Your sophomore year, you guys won 99-87.
Yeah.
They don't have box scores, but...
Yeah. I think I had 28 or something like that, if my memory serves. I played good. It's when we got... We lost by 30 to that Illinois team that made it to the championship game with Darren Williams and D. Brown. Mm. We lost to him in Conseco and got our ass. I mean, we were down 30 at half. So I remember going in halftime getting fucking, you know, MF'd all the way into the locker room, the whole team, because it was terrible. We were just getting waxed. So we beat him in the second half by like a couple, like we kept it at the round the same. And so we were trying to feel good about ourselves. And Coach Few just gave us the, we are not a moral victory program speech anymore. And it was so true. And then we had UW coming up like 2 days later and we had to fly back. And it was kind of one of those gut check, like, all right, are we going to be good this year or not? And this UW team was good. We didn't even mention Nate Robinson.
Yeah.
We didn't even mention Nate Robinson. Yeah. This is crazy. Yeah. Okay. So Nate Robinson, they had Bobby Jones. I think Brandon Roy was on that team. It was hurt. Trey Simmons, obviously. And they were ranked 12th or, you know, whatever. And so we, you know, it was one of those all time classic, like loudest the Kennel's been in a long time. You know what I'm saying? new building. It was the second year or first year in that building. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not letting these assholes beat us in our new place, blah, blah, blah. High scoring. Everybody was hooping. They were hooping. We were hooping. It was one of those all-time class. I need to find the tape on that game. Show it to my kids. That was one of the more fun ones I've ever played in. Just everybody's hooping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it just flow of the game was good. Crowd was loud, like I said. High scoring, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so I got the box score up now. Like, mm-hmm. Roni had 23. You had 26. Sean Mallon had 16. Mm-hmm. Derek Ravio had 21. Yeah. Like, it was
just hoops. Yeah, we were hooping.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of those games where everybody's just like scoring, blah, blah. It was just fun. Like, when I say open gym, it wasn't like people weren't playing defense, but like guys were just free flowing and going up and down. Like I said, it was super loud in there. It was officiated the right way. Like, just let us play.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a bloodbath, but they let us play. And then we lost. They went crazy at their place. We should have won that game too. That's the Jeremy Pargo 8 turnover game.
It says six, but there's probably other ones in there.
I still give him crap about him. Jeremy turned out to be a fantastic professional, great teammate. Love the guy. I still, every time I see him, it's like, do you remember that game? You know, we were having a few beers. Last time I saw him, I think it was the Final Four. I was like, hey, you remember that game? You know, and I know the answer. You had 8 turnovers when I was a junior. It was your first year, and you shit down your leg. Yeah, Mo, shut the fuck up. You know, it's one of those deals. You know, right. When it's your buddy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, again, that's my point finishing off this episode and kind of this rant is like, those UW games were fun for both fan bases.
Yeah.
And they were great for tournament seeding. That UW team, my junior year, should have beat UConn that year and lost in the Sweet 16, like, had that game won.
Yeah, they did.
You know what I'm saying? And those, it's not a bash UW in a sense of, you know, I hate you guys or anything. It's just like, I wish this program would get back to being on track, man. And I know that it may hurt us a little bit in recruiting, but as a fan aspect or as a people that call the games, like, it's fun when those games are kind of heated and a little bit edged to them and the student sections are a little bit inappropriate and a little bit, because, you know, a lot of these kids, you know, from Northern California, the demographic that goes to Gonzaga, it's the same one that kind of goes to UW, you know? You get what I'm saying?
For so sure, yeah.
They all kind of know each other. Then you can kind of find out. My point is, like, you can find out about some of these players' personal lives that you shouldn't be able to find out about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes it a little more spicy. So anyway.
Do you have any insight of why the playing against each other stopped, why UW and Gonzaga stopped playing?
So I think the story I heard, and I'm 90% sure I'm correct, 95% sure I'm correct, but I'm just trying to remember exactly what happened. So when I leave that 5% out, that's why. I think Romar didn't want to do the home and home. He wanted to play neutral in Seattle.
Yeah.
And Fuey's like, come on, man.
Yeah.
And I think before, during those runs, Coach Romar had some fantastic teams and he had a little bit of down years. Obviously, that's why he got let go.
Mm-hmm.
I think he didn't want to take it on the chin from Gonzaga.
Yeah.
And I have the most respect for him. And so I think they were just like, screw it. So I'm glad that it came back and I hope it stays.
Yeah.
And it's not just Coach Romar's fault is my point.
Right.
Like, I'm sure there was some stuff with, like, why don't you want to play home on home? And they're sitting there like, well, dude, it's a big draw for both of us. We can revenue split, you know, so they could probably counter back, like, instead of going to your rinky dink 6,000 arena, let's go to fucking Key Arena at the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We'll split the beer sales. We all make 200,000 bucks plus or whatever. And, and it's a great game. It's on ESPN. What are you talking? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, it's not just them, but I think it was Coach Romar that just kind of didn't want to take it on the chin a little bit. That's when we were rolling and their program was kind of going on the decline.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's the reality of sports and it's self-preservation too. Like, I've had people ask me on podcasts too, like, how come there's not bigger matchups in college basketball all the time? Like, so all 30 games we're supposed to play the top 15, like, it doesn't work out that way. And then also I'm like, do you do realize that some coaches, probably most, have like bonuses within their contracts? 20 wins is probably a check. 25 wins is probably a check. 30 is probably a bigger check. Making the NCAA tournament's a check too. Probably 8 seed or below is a check, right? Yeah. So like there's some method to, hey, let's get some W's on this deal here and
yeah,
I'll get a nice $25,000 check, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? Or 15, even if it's like 15K, like, well, I can redo my bathroom.
right.
Or yeah. whatever it is, but yeah. It's just like sweet, you know? So that's part of it. But anyway, go Zags. Appreciate, you know, helping out with these solo episodes.
No, they're fun. I do have one question for you. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
And it's about ball security. And I wanted to ask this earlier against Baylor because ball security has been the biggest, a big problem for Gonzaga. And this comes from the Cots. And he asks.
The Cots?
The Cots.
Spell that.
T-H-E-K-O-T-Z.
Okay.
And so.
I was going to say, if you're listening to it, it might sound like something different. That's why I told you to spell it out.
The Cots. Sorry.
Fair.
I'm going to add to this question. He's asked, do you think that Gonzaga can overcome their issues with ball security? I think the answer is yes.
Yes.
What do they need to do? Yeah.
It's going to be a simplistic answer. It's literally one of those deals. You just got to be more solid and more concise with your decision making. And I know that it's not a deep analytical or a, you know, like a analyst point of view or why, you know, like I do it on the radio, so I got to explain things right away.
Right.
But like it comes back to simplicity, like, you know, make the for sure play, hit singles, not home runs. I can give all the cliches, come to a jump stop, fundamentals. I mean, that's a lot of times all it is.
Yeah.
It's not really a skill thing per se. Obviously, at this level, guys can dribble left-handed, can dribble right-handed, they can do all that stuff. So that you throw the skill aspect out of it. Now, if you're in the younger ages, then you can be like, okay, you know, Johnny or Sally can't dribble left. That's why they're turning the ball over. We need to work on that.
Right.
That's out of the equation now. It's, hey, man, you're playing at a high-level Division I school. You need to come to a jump stop and fucking throw the pass to your teammate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to tell you. If not, you got to sit down.
Yeah.
So it really gets into that. So I think it's definitely an issue. And again, it'll go back to the further point I made earlier in the episode. Downhill turnovers are much different than the Cots.
Right.
Is talking about.
Right.
As far as ball security. And he's absolutely right. Like if you're making plays, trying to go towards the rim and trying to score the basketball and those turn into turnovers, it's much better than ball entries, reversals, dribbling off your foot. Like I mentioned, the soft press, throwing it over guy's head, that shit kills you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a difference in that, but I think it's just getting back to being simple and being more fundamental, honestly.
Do you think part of it is just, it looks like they're out of control sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's just like, the pressure of scoring and like.
Yeah, there's a great John Wooden quote, be quick, not in a hurry. Mm. And everybody that plays basketball is listening. Some coach, hopefully in some point in your life, has told you that. It's so true. Play fast, but don't play out of control. Same thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, go half a count slower, you know, or just get into get into what's comfortable with you. You know, and then also like too, if you're smoking layups and smoking floaters, like you got to get in the gym and work on those things. Not that I'm not saying our guys haven't, but also, if as a coaching staff, if I see you shoot shots during the games that I don't see you work on, then we have a problem. If I see you work on them and you are missing, that's okay. Keep working on them. But if I see you repping them, I got to live with it. So again, to wrap the show up, like I think there's a lot of room for growth for this team. And I'm not just saying that because they lost to Baylor, but like there are some young pieces or inexperienced pieces compared to last year on the perimeter that can play better. And if they play better, then we're fine. Season's still young. I'm excited. I'm excited to see Julian bounce back. I'm excited to see Nolan bounce back. Excited to see us play Kent State, obviously, and then UW on Friday. That's going to be fun. I'm excited to, actually watch that game with a better UW team. And yeah, man, I appreciate, again, you coming on the show, helping out with this, because it'd be hard to talk just to the wall.
No problem at all. I don't know as much about basketball as you, obviously. Of course, but like, it's fun to talk about, and you're making me excited about Gonzaga.
Yeah, because
like,
yeah, it's, you just, should be.
It's because, you know, as like a fan, like I've been watching them for so long. I mean, you know, I was 13 years old when it all, like, the run started.
Yeah,
and like, you talking about UW is this makes me excited, because those were awesome games.
Yeah,
and WSU's not the same. Like, they're not going to get the same players.
They're a great football school.
Yeah,
and they're just not a hoop.
Yeah,
it's just not what they are.
And
no offense.
And Gonzaga needs like
Kyle Smith's good coach,
a good natural rival.
Yeah,
and so this needs to keep on happening. And that Friday game is going to be, I think the Kendall's going to be jumping.
I hope so too. But so. Again, thanks for coming on. Thanks to our sponsors. Perimeter Season 2, Episode 4, done.
The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is produced independently and locally in Spokane, Washington by Spokast Studios. Our city, our stories. Visit www.spokast.com to learn more about how you can start your very own podcast today. The Perimeter with Adam Morrison is presented by Owens Farms Piedmontese and supported by Delish Hamburgers and the Spokane Workers Co-op. Thank you to Jinx Universe and Position Music for letting the Perimeter use the song Let's Do It Again from Jinx's album, Make It Look Good.